I'd like to bring this meeting of House Education to order. It's 8:07 on Wednesday, February 10th. And present are Representative Book, Gardner, Edgman, Wilson, myself, Jared Seaton. Remind everybody about their cell phones. And today we have HB 317, which is basic, the BSA special needs and transportation funding, forward funding of education. And then we have, if we have time, HB 206. We'll be taking testimony on that. We will not be moving 206 today. Is there anything to come before the committee before we start? Okay, so we'll open public testimony on House Bill 317. That's a committee substitute that was posted online so that we have everybody is working on version S. So we have Carl Rose. Are you here?
Good morning, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning.
For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. My comments will be brief. We had a chance to meet this weekend with school board members. We reviewed the legislation and are very appreciative of this effort. As you know, we served on the Education Funding Task Force. And this is an opportunity. We look at this as an extension of that effort. The increase of from 100 to 125 is appreciated. Also, the address of the block grant in the first year at 21.5 and the second year at 23 is also appreciated. And we appreciate the with the grant process for funding, we speak of increases with regard to the Consumer Price Index. We do appreciate that because we don't think there's going to be very many decreases here. But the bill was received very well, and we've been on the Hill visiting with House and Senate members, and there seems to be a very high level of support for what's being proposed here. And so that ends my testimony. We do support this bill, and thank you very much.
Great. Thank you for your testimony. Are there any questions for Mr. Rose? Seeing none, thank you again.
Thank you.
John Alcantara.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, John Alcantara, Government Relations Director for NEA Alaska. Kind of echo the statements made by the Executive Director of AASB. Certainly appreciate the efforts being made in House Bill 317. The forward funding of education has been very welcomed by our members, both teacher members and education support professional members. I guess as a parent of four children, and two of which are in school, one starting kindergarten this year, and one on the way to the school system, I guess a couple things just maybe as suggestions is that when the state of Alaska is in a place where it's never been in our 50-year history with $10 billion in savings accounts, I guess a couple things our members have been talking about 2 weeks ago at the Captain Cook was a potential expediting of the area cost differentials. I think there's a lot of work that went into HB 273, but a lot of folks from around the state, and we obviously represent members from Metlakatla to Barrow and every point in between, there seems to be a lot of discussion of why are we making our school districts wait an additional 2 years to implement those things. I mean, there was a three-year funding plan, but as everybody here knows, a five-year implementation of area cost differentials. So I guess that's something I'd ask this committee or the further committees to maybe take a look at and see if there's something they can do in that arena. So overall, though, you know, it certainly is a appreciated and welcome effort to forward fund and to ratchet up the base student allocation, realizing that in FY11, starting here July 1st, we're looking at only an increase to the base of about $100. Some of you may have seen headlines in the Anchorage paper where they're talking about elimination of dozens of teaching positions based on their upcoming budget. So, certainly any ratcheting up of the base student allocation is something that would be applauded. But the efforts of 317 You guys have done a very good job on this piece of legislation. I look forward to seeing it move forward, and I agree with the previous speaker that there seems to be folks I've talked to in the last 10 days, there seems to be a good support for this bill moving forward. So thank you for your time today. Try to answer any questions if you have.
Are there any questions for Mr. O'Kent? Seeing none, thank you for your testimony.
Sure.
Next we have Jeff Steffen.
Chairman, I just signed up.
Oh, sorry.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate that. I missed the comment at the side. We have online LaVon Druce.
Hi, Representative Singh. This is LaVon Druce from Kenai, President of the Kenai Peninsula Education Association. I want to thank the committee for forward funding K-12 education with HB 317 and the recognition of vocational and special education services for our students. However, I would like to boldly suggest today that the recommendation of proposed changes in Section 2 and 3 of HB 317 actually take effect July of 2010 rather than waiting to 2011. I would like to give two examples to illustrate this point. One was just mentioned by Mr. Alcantara, and that is, Representative Seaton, as you well know, the ICE recommendation for the area cost differential for the Kenai will not be fully implemented until 2013. We are still making up ground until we get there, plus we are also now having to fight the local effort for funding here from our borough. And the second example I'll give is one that's pretty near and dear to my heart and close to home, and that is what it looks like to lose one full-time equivalent teacher from a school. And I'm going to take a high school as an example. I taught at the high school level, and my husband still teaches language arts. Five classes, different classes every day at Soldotna High School. And the pupil-teacher ratio at that level, when one staff is placed in another school or not retired, goes from 28 to 30 students to one, but if that staff were retained, could go as low as 22 or 24 students to one teacher. That's per class, and Soldotna High School teachers teach five classes per day. My husband began this year with 38 students in his junior honors English class. He teaches the AP English, the honors English, college prep writing, all writing-based classes. And it's not really classroom management at the high school level as much as it is grading papers. And he grades essays every single day. An example is one that was lying on the dining room table this morning on the Great Gatsby. Comments like, commas mean a non-essential clause, this is an essential clause. Those type of handwritten comments on every paper. He grades the students' papers who are going into college, and they do very well when they get into college because of that type of commitment to his classes. You know, we've benefited greatly here on the Kenai with the stimulus monies. Our teachers are attending professional development courses, learning new technology to use in their classrooms, and they're really very much enjoying this. However, these things cannot be fully utilized in their classrooms when classrooms are overcrowded. So in the perfect world, the base student allocation would actually increase 5% to a number of 5859 and hopefully would take effect this July of 2010 rather than waiting until next year of 2011. I would respectfully suggest that it's not about want or not being grateful. We are very grateful, but it is about having the means to do more. And as long as the state has the means to do more, I will advocate for more money going into K-12 education. Thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Bruce? Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Representative Seaton.
Dave Jones, are you there?
Mr. Chair, moderator, Dave Jones has to come up for just a moment. He may be back later, and I will let the moderator down there know when he returns.
Okay, do we have anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify on House Bill 317? Do we have anybody else online? I think Mr. Jones is going to have to make his comments to the next committee. So with that, I will close public testimony on House Bill 317. And it's open for committee discussion. Are there any further questions on House Bill 317? Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Or comments.
Yeah, okay, I was just going to ask if I could make a comment. The comments that were made this morning, I really totally agree with, and would love to have made that jump in the base in the district cost factor to 3 years. But unfortunately, we have to also think about what we can get out of the committee and what will pass. And unfortunately, that was a deal that was made a couple years ago, maybe 3 years ago now, I can't remember. And but I absolutely agree with them 100% and wish that we could do that. It's unfortunate that we won't be able to, I don't think.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I don't agree that we're held to a deal that was made by other people at another time. And I think that realistically what we do in this committee might not get all the way through the process, but at the same time, it's our responsibility to make recommendations and to pass something that we think is the best we can do. And so I don't lay down the possibility of doing that, and I think it's fine for the Education Committee to reach a little higher than we think might actually happen. That's my first comment. And I'd also like to ask the chair a question about the letter of intent.
Yes.
And I agree with this. I mean, I think you've talked to all of us about this in advance, but my question is, this is not limiting on what districts can do. We're telling districts this is our intention, but it doesn't have the force of law. And we would expect the Department of Education to kind of oversee and look for compliance with our intent. Is that?
excuse me, Representative Gardner. I appreciate you bringing this forward. I think I better read the letter of intent in before we discuss it.
Okay.
The audience doesn't have it, so let me go ahead and do that. It is the intent of the legislature that increases in the block funding for education in AS 1417-420A1, as amended by House Bill 317, are meant to enhance the district's ability to offer career technical vocational education as an addition to other funds that a district applies to career technical vocational education. This increase is not to be interpreted as the only funds a district can designate for career technical vocational education. So that is the letter of intent that we have before the committee to send along with the bill. And so addressing Representative Gardner's point, this is really a message that we are sending with the bill to the districts so that there's no misunderstanding that in writing, you know, that, you know, we're intending this not to be the sole source of their vocational education funds, because if you get into a category funding and somebody looks at this from a district level and says, oh, the category for vocational education is we spend 1.5% of our 21.5% in that future year, that would not be the what the intent of the committee is, but that could be an interpretation. The way we've set up the bill, we cannot specifically direct how a district spends those particular dollars. So we're indicating the intention of why we're putting in those extra dollars, but there's no legal constraint on the districts, and each district will have to make that determination. But we hope that they understand when we're spending money and we're wanting to accelerate career and technical and vocational education, that the districts would take that in consideration when adopting their program.
Thank you,
Representative Gardner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That was my understanding, and I just wanted to confirm it. So we are relying on the fact that districts have talked with us about their desire for more vocational education funding. So we'll trust that they'll move forward in the way we intend.
And that is correct in the district. The reason we went with the block grant was we heard from multiple sources across the state that career and technical vocational education is being constrained because of the dollars that are there, and there was a desire by many committee members, as well as the public, to make sure that we had programs that were adequately addressing the 70% or so of students that are not necessarily going to college, but that we make sure that we have adequate funds to prepare them for their life choices.
Thank you.
Representative Book, and then Munoz and
Thank you, Chair Seaton. Welcome back.
Thank you.
There have been discussions in my office and also other discussions that briefly touched on returning to categorical funding, and certainly this mandate by our chairman, it is not a mandate. It is a highly suggestive recommendation that those of us on the committee are going to be very cognizant of, and the stewardship of these fundings will be overseen carefully. So hopefully the opportunity to change in the direction of vocational technical education will be seen as just that, an opportunity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Munoz.
Oh, thank you. As I recall it, we were discussing 1.5% on the addition to the career and technical add-on, and I was not at the last meeting. Could you give me a little bit of background on the change that was made at the last meeting to 1.2, or 1.215, rather?
yes. Representative Munoz, the 120, the figure the way it's written, 120 is the 20% block grant.
Okay.
And so the 120 1.5 is a 1.5% increase.
Okay. I got it. Okay.
The amendment that we made at the last meeting was to also put a 1.5% increase in the second year of this forward funding bill.
Okay.
So it would then go to 23%
okay.
in the second year.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Wilson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make a comment that when the school boards came around and visited with me, many of them made the comments that they really appreciated that increase, but for many of them, it would just be eaten up with special ed, and it would never be able to. There would not be enough left over to restart a program if they had to drop it in the past. And so, but this is a start, and as we know, little baby steps sometimes is what we have to take to get what we want. And I just want that to be on the record that it's going to be a very difficult thing for some schools to start over again when they've had to cut because of the not getting enough funding in the past. And many of them have had to let go teachers, and that meant programs. And this is good, and it will be used, but there will be times when it won't be used for voc ed because it's not enough to restart a program.
Thank you, Representative Wilson. And you know, one of the things that has changed somewhat from the past is also that there are many virtual classes, so that vocational technical education used to kind of entail it's going to be home ec classroom, and all you have to have the whole class in. Hopefully what people are looking at is a diversity of ways. If you're talking about home economics, there, you know, hopefully the districts will be looking at internships for some students at a restaurant, or internships, or working with businesses, and not think in the box that the only way to provide that, or a shop class, or you know, auto mechanics, is to have a full class and have a teacher and have a room. Whereas in the world we're approaching now, and as we've talked, hopefully we'll engage some of those other alternatives that might be able to offer those opportunities to students in a more economic way. And not meaning that the old shop classes weren't totally valid and, mm-hmm. and really good, but they're for some of those smaller districts. I think that what we need to do is make sure that we encourage them to use a variety of resources. And I'm not meaning to negate at all what yeah. you're saying. I'm just, if the districts are listening to us, I want you to be sure that they're not thinking that the money that we're putting in there is only directed at the traditional way they did vocational and career and technical. Are there further comments from the committee? Committee has read the letter of intent. Is there any comments on that? Or any changes anyone wants to make?
I think you needed that in there.
What's that?
I think you might need that after a...
And would you tell me about where that is?
Mr. Chairman, on the third line, as you were reading it, you inserted a that
oh.
as a technical amendment, and I think the compound complex sentence probably deserves a that in it.
Where did I do that? Benjamin, where it might
line three, if you go to the far right, compact forwards.
That A district?
Yeah. Okay, that's not a bill, so I think that we don't need that as an amendment. I think we're just taking that as a committee suggestion and incorporating mm-hmm. that wording into that letter of intent.
That sounds good to me.
Well, after that, Representative Wilson.
Are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Mr. Chair, just...
Representative Wilson.
I'd just like to make one comment, and yeah. I don't want to object to passing the bill to do it.
You
know, my district, Anchorage, didn't talk to me about moving forward the ICER recommendations and for obvious reasons, and so I'm not prepared here with an amendment. But my dad used to have a saying, he still does, those that don't ask don't get. And, you know, I think that it's our responsibility to ask for what we really want and to move what we really want. At the same time, I'm not ready. I don't have an amendment to do that. And I don't sense support for it on this committee, and so I'm not going to offer it. But I would like to be on record saying I think it is what we should do, and I don't want to delay moving this bill out of here.
Okay, thank you, and I do appreciate that. We do need to recall that what we have is a finance subcommittee, because we're talking about the budget. This is a future budget, this forward funding after the coming year, so I think that that's totally appropriate to come into the context of the current budget discussions. And but I appreciate the and not complicating this one. And we do have the other vehicle of the current budget to accomplish.
Some of us do.
let's see. Any further comments, Representative Wilson?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move CS for House Bill number 317 with individual recommendations, accompanying letter of intent, and fiscal notes to be moved out of committee.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, committee substitute for House Bill 317 with attached fiscal notes and letter of intent will move from committee. And we'll take just a moment while at ease while call the committee back to order. We now have before us House Bill 206, and that is version P. The committee adopted and posted on the website, so hopefully everybody has version P to comment on. We do have a package of comments that have come in, and they should be on your desk, or were those distributed? Those were distributed to your office. So are there committee comments before we get started with public testimony? Okay, seeing none, we'll open public testimony. And we have Carl Rhodes.
Good morning.
Welcome again.
Thank you again. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards.
And before you get started, I forgot to recognize that on the record that Representative Munoz has joined us much earlier. Thank you.
Thank you. We've had a chance, the School Board Association was in town. We had a chance to take a look at the bill, and we had a lot of conversation. There is some concern, and I think some of them are addressed in the comments that you have in your record. So I won't reiterate some of those, but I do want to say that there are a couple issues that we're concerned about. Chairman Seaton had a chance to address us Tuesday morning, and he had mentioned about this idea of database decision making and having the data. And I would ask some consideration. When you're looking at a remedy of an 80-day count, I'm not sure that we have the data that suggests that an 80-day count will remedy the dropout rate, as mentioned in your sponsor statement. What I am very concerned about, and most of the people there, is this assumption that after a student count, systematically we push young people out of school. I think it's an incorrect assumption, and many of us have many programs to try to enhance our delivery system and make it more relevant for young people, trying to keep them in, even to the degree where we have resolutions trying to extend the mandatory attendance to from 16 to 18. It was a concern that one of the factors bearing on this decision to move on an 80-day count was that we are systematically forcing or pushing young people out. A quote was made that young people are a valuable commodity before the count date, and once they're counted, they're not valuable to us anymore. This was made to us just Monday morning. It was offensive, and I think I'll stop there. I don't want to push it any farther other than to say that we do everything we can to try to educate all of our kids. I would say that last November I testified before the Senate Health, Education, Labor, and Pension Committee. Senator Murkowski had a field hearing. And if you had allowed me a little bit of attitude, latitude.
Perfect.
We already recognize Mr. Rose.
Don Alcantara sitting back there saying, yeah, give him some attitude. I had a chance to share with them that some of the things that we do for dropouts, we do them within our systems, and we don't give it a name. I would just share my own personal story was that as a young boy, I was somewhat mischievous and tended to get myself in a little bit of trouble. But I had people who noticed that I had some talent, athletic talent. The system made accommodations for me. I am dyslexic before it was identified. I didn't realize this until I was almost out of college. But the system made accommodations for me because of some of the talents that I had. As a result, I finished school, went into service, graduated from college. Many, many young people might not be getting that kind of accommodation. The systems do what they can. But what I'm telling you, if they can accommodate me, they could accommodate every student. And I think that's what we try to do. That's what we see out there. So my testimony was along the lines of, at our association, we have the Alaska ICE, the Initiative for Community Engagement. The belief is that if we're going to change the performance of young kids and the decisions that they make, we have to change our communities and the way we think. So we're working in communities to get adults to understand that they have responsibility. We all have a shared responsibility for young people and the way that they develop. I don't need to tell you that many times I see young people walking down the street and they pass adults, and adults kind of look the other way or don't try not to speak to them, even go out of their way not to speak to young people, rather than to say good morning, how are you doing, or just to engage them. The point of this Alaska Initiative for Community Engagement is to get schools and faith communities and social groups and parents and families to understand that they can play a very important role in the development of kids. And in doing so, you place an emphasis on the things that should be valued, like an education. And we have statistics, and Mr. Chairman, I think I might ask to consider a joint committee meeting so we can show you the data that we have back. We have an evaluation that shows that, in fact, communities make a huge difference, and they do affect student achievement, and they do affect kids' graduation rates. I'm getting off point, but the 80-day count period, the assumption that that will remedy dropouts is, I don't have the data on that, but I do have the data that some other things do work. Now, I will share with you that Unalaska spoke yesterday at our breakout session and said that they had gone back and done a 10-year snapshot of their attendance, and 9 out of 10 years showed that they, in fact, had less kids in February than they had 9 out of 10 years. And I suspect that around the state, you're going to find that enrollments do drop in the winter. I think some of the larger school districts had said that, but most of our small rural school districts in Arctic regions of the state see very few people move into the village in February. They see them leaving in the fall. And so I thought I'd pass on some of that information to you. And then on behalf of small schools that have limited administration, you know, in February, we're conducting mid-year reporting. We're developing budgets or budget revisions. We're preparing student assessments in January and February. And it's a crunch time for us that, you know, we kind of go silently into the void. We don't say much. I mean, the criticism is that we have too much administration, but for many of our small school districts, we do not have very much administration. And I would say even for our large districts, the administrations that they do have is commensurate with their student enrollment. I mean, if you have 50,000 students, you have to have considerable administration to administer a district like that. So I would just ask that we take a look at this and we have a conversation about what we might be able to do, but the insinuation that that children are a valuable commodity before a student count and they're not as important to us after the student count is offensive, and I would ask you to remember that. We had a chance to talk about the work keys. There's still a lack of understanding about how this is really going to affect some of us. Some of our kids are going to be college bound, and what effect would this work key have on that? Is it mandatory that they take this test? How relevant would that be to some of them? I recall this conversation in the summer when we were meeting. Secondly, I would draw your attention to the effects of the language on page 2, line 17, when it says 1403.075 may enroll, a student may enroll in a post-secondary institution, you know, in the state approved by the commissioner. May is fine, but when you go down to line 25, you say that a secondary school shall make arrangements for fees for the appropriate secondary course. When you say that a district shall make arrangements, and you say it's only in state, you've removed the point of negotiation. Now it's come to daddy time. We have to go to a school in state, and there's not the incentive to negotiate to try to get individual school districts to be able to negotiate something on the best on behalf of their kids. Another testimony or another person who spoke up said that they provide this service largely with adjunct professors in the school district through the university for as little as $25 per credit. Would this bill alter that program? And many of our school districts do this. So it's the may and the shall. I don't know exactly what that means. But if it removes us from being able to fashion a program that is more economically advantageous to the student and the school district, I don't really think we want to do that. I don't think it's your intent. So I raise that issue to consider that language. We have concerns about the bill. I think I know where it's trying to go, and I would like to help on this, but these are some of the comments that we had this weekend, and I just wanted to share them with you. So I'll try to answer any questions you might have.
Representative Wilson.
You know, when I read that, I don't read what when I read it, it says they shall make arrangements for the fees. Well, some schools are going to make arrangements so that the kids only have to pay $25, and some schools are going to make arrangement with, I heard that Dillingham, the fishermen pay it. It doesn't say the school has to pay it. It says they shall make arrangements for the fees for the appropriate courses. So that leaves it totally open to me. So, I would like to hear some of the other comments from people on the committee.
If I may, Mr. Chair, Representative Wilson, I think in the sponsor...
We'll get the committee discussion after that.
Yeah, I think in a sponsor statement, you mentioned free, that they would be able to, let's say, I'm trying to look for it here, that the students would be entitled to start college. Let's see, where would we go? I'm not seeing it, no.
And Mr. Rose, we'll look at that. Of course, that sponsor statement might have been the one on the original version, which we changed to this language to make sure that the original version had language that indicated that, you know, a district might have to look at, you know, full tuition or something, and we've changed that in this version to make sure it was, we tried to make it clear that that was not the intent of or the requirement in here, and if we need to clarify that more, I think the committee is willing to do this because we're in no way wanting to indicate that. I appreciate your comment about in the state, and that was on line 17 you were talking
correct.
About. Is that correct?
Yes.
A post-secondary institution in the state that is approved. And we will talk with the department about that, as well as, you know, because we have virtual courses and other things, and I don't know if that would limit, you know, having those wording in there would limit it, because that's not our intent, is to limit it that if you're in Barrow and you need to take a class that, a specific class in process technology that's offered through the University of Washington, there's no intent here to say, oh, that student couldn't take that kind of a course. So I appreciate you bringing that up. I did want to just put on the record so that all the districts know that the term push out is a term that the department came up with because they didn't like the term dropout. And the graduation working group that I was with two times ago went through a full and developed 17 different things that push kids out of school, and including some regulations that we have, the 10-day mandatory drop from enrollment if you have an ed contact. So there were a whole number of things. So the term push out was not intended to mean that the districts are actively pushing students out, but it was the preferred term by the education community that was working on the graduation working group. I mean, to me, I know what a dropout is, and I know that we want to prevent that, but if the education community as a whole wants to use a different term, that's the only reason that term was used. So I want to make that clarification.
Can I ask a question of the testifier, please?
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Carl, I heard quite forcefully from the school districts in my legislative district their concern about this 80-day counting period that's in House Bill 206. Is there any school districts that you're aware of that support this? Is it the larger school districts, perhaps?
They were, through the chair, people spoke favorably about the recalculation. You know, if you do have an increase, you're allowed to, in February, to go back and recalculate the whole harmless, if you will, at your last year's base. But by and large, the 80-day was of great concern. I don't think there was anybody who supported it, or at least they didn't understand it. And when we didn't have the data that showed that it would address the dropout rate, so...
And some of the comments that we've had are like this from North Authority School District that we've come in. It says, in reality, the count is below the level in rural Alaska due to PFE checks being distributed at the time of the year, which is October, and the count and parents often traveling to Anchorage for shopping, et cetera. So in that case, we're getting testimony from rural districts that say that they are, with a 20-day count period, are not showing the full enrollment that you would during an 80-day count period. Now, whether that is all understood or, you know, these are to be worked out. We're not intending to move this bill. I'm hoping that districts will look carefully at their numbers. We've asked Unalaska to send us their chart of their timelines and their enrollments and those kind of things, and also their explanations for why they see lower counts in the rest in the other half of the year. And so we are requesting districts across the state, and I'm doing this again here in this testimony, so that we can get that data and that understanding from those districts. And you know, because we have had testimony here in this room of rural districts saying, you know, we're not going to expend the time. We've got these kids that dropped out, but we're not going to pursue them because we're concentrating the kids that want to be in school. We've had people testify here in person that they left school and nobody came after them. They were under 16 years and they were out of school for a year and a half and nobody from ever pursued them. So again, the intent here is not saying that a district is pushing out, but to give an incentive to make sure that they go out and pull them back. And so it's an unfortunate term, a push out to me, but that's where it came from. So and I don't mean to be in debate. I just want to say that we do solicit your information as well as the others. So.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, we'll AASB will do a quick survey to try to assist on this issue and get whatever information we can as well. So thank you.
Appreciate it. And we're also going to be asking the administration to come forward with some more analysis on this.
Thank you.
Let's see, we have, were there any more questions for Mr. Rose? Seeing none? We have Representative Munoz.
A comment on the 80-day school count, and this is something that I've been concerned about in previous hearings that we've had on this issue. At one time, several years ago, I served on a rural advisory school board for the Chatham School Board, Chatham School District, and that's an REAA that includes four small communities. This is a major concern, having a count that goes over two semester periods. So, again, I really appreciate Carl speaking to that issue, because I don't think we want to put forward legislation that is going to hurt some of the smaller schools. I know that's not the intention, but I do think that expansion of the count in that first semester is worthy of pursuing, but not expanding over two semesters. That would be my hope.
And I guess we want to solicit from school districts not only their numbers, but why the kids aren't there. I mean, if the kids are just not attending, don't come back after the Christmas break because they decide to do something else, and we should be out and pulling them into school. If there are specific reasons why those districts can show us that those students are no longer within their attendance area, then we need to know that. But if the thing is that people just don't come back after Christmas because they didn't want to, we do have compulsory education till 16, and it's the school district's responsibility, or somebody's responsibility, to utilize that. And so that's the purpose of this whole thing. And so again, I'm saying this as a request to school districts to comment and to send us information and explanations of those lowered attendance so that we can go forward. Next is Dave Jones. Dave Jones, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Good morning, Dave. Would you identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony?
Yes, my name is Dave Jones. I'm the Assistant Superintendent for the Kenai Peninsula Rural School District. like to thank the committee for allowing testimony today. Wanted to talk about 206 and some of the concerns that we have with 206 on the Kenai. I guess the first one would be when we look at the work keys, we're not real sure how the testing implementation of that will be put forward. If it's in a similar manner as the high school graduation qualifying exam where there's two testing periods a year, if it moves forward in that, then we're okay with that. But if it moves forward as an online that's available multiple times throughout the year, districts will still have to provide the monitoring. You know, we currently are set up and ready and available to do the monitoring twice a year as we do with high school graduation qualifying. If the work keys changes the number of times they can take it, then the monitoring requirement will put additional staffing requirements on the district. Second point where we have concerns is right along the lines of Carl Rose. And we obviously have some differences when we read and interpret, because as the finance person for the school district here, when I read secondary school shall make arrangement for the fees, my interpretation is that we're going to pay the bill. And when it talks about, when your sponsor statement talks about students should start college with 6 credits, somebody's going to have to pay for those 6 credits, and we believe that says the school district's going to do it. I haven't been able to find a fiscal note for 206, which would mean that there's no monies designed at paying those fees, which means then the districts will pay them. My interpretation and our concern. The next area I'd like to comment on is the 80-day count period. And a concern that, and again, Mr. Rose stated this pretty well, but a concern that this is addressed, are we really going to affect the dropout rate? And that's where this is intended to be. We're a little concerned as well as that there's this belief out there that after the 20-day count period, we're turning our backs and telling students to go away. In our district, when we look at, well, first of all, in our district, one of our board's main goals is to decrease the dropout rate and increase the graduation rate. When we look at the programs that we have to do that, if you're looking at a traditional neighborhood program, we have credit recovery programs that are available to help the traditional student. If you're not a traditional student, we have multiple alternative schools that you're able to go to and work in your manner or your way. And if the traditional or the alternative schools don't do it, we have district correspondence program that you can turn to help you with your needs. And so as a district, we're a little offended that we're being faced with the fact that we are turning our backs on students after 20 days and not valuing them. Sometimes in legislation, what we see legislation that's addressed at some individual practices of individual districts, but in the end, it affects all districts across the state. And I would like to say that if we have these instances and we heard that we had students testify, nobody came, well, let's look at those districts and find out why it didn't happen in those districts, and let's have the Department of Education address those districts, because we are concerned about this. We previously on this bill, Eddie Jeans with the Department of Education testified, and that was when we were talking to February average count. He testified that if from previous years enrollments and the stuff that happened in the past, that he was sure that this would result in an overall decrease in support for school districts. I think you're seeing that there's a belief across the district that the 80-day count will result in a decrease. Our concerns also are along the small schools. We have one school right now, Cooper Landing, that fell below 10 this year with a 20-day count. They're struggling to try and reopen for next year. I think there's a possibility, but the 80-day increase, the increase to 80 days will make that harder. When Senate Bill, before Senate Bill 36 changed to how the count period and the foundation formula was done, there was a grace period of a year for schools that fell below 10. That was eliminated with SB 36. Recent legislation that was passed gives district-wide protection if there's a 5% drop or more, but it doesn't give individual school protection. So if this is going to go through, I'd really like to see the one-year grace period passed for the 80-day count period as well. And not to be totally negative, I do like, and we do like, if this goes through, that our funding will be based on the preceding fiscal year with an opportunity to count up but not be penalized for the count down. I think that's a very positive possibility for districts. Thank you.
Thank you, Dave. And just for clarification, our understanding is that the bill is structured with funding on the previous year does accomplish the grace period of a year, because you get funded on the previous year for small schools as well. So you wouldn't be in the situation that you were this year, but if you didn't, through your 80-day count period, get up to 10, you would know ahead of time for the next year that you're, you know, you don't have adequate attendance. So the intent here was to make sure that people knew for budgeting in their future what their base would be, instead of giving a hit at the end. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the idea of the clarification on the other end. If you could, I'd appreciate if you would send in how the your attendance works with alternative schools, and whether those students are moving, you know, out of the regular school, and what the attendance looks like over time with the time of the year with the alternative schools and correspondence and those things. That would be helpful to the committee.
We'll work at getting that together for you.
Thank you. And are there further questions for Mr. Jones? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony, and any further written testimony is appreciated. We have Karen Goodwin. Karen Goodwin?
Yes, Karen Goodwin here.
Good morning. Would you go ahead and identify yourself? And I think, let's see, we do have for Northwest Arctic Borough, just so you know, we do have a testimony, a written testimony here on behalf of Norman Eek, superintendent. And so, but go ahead and proceed with your testimony. I just want to let you know that we did have that piece of paper in front of us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Karen Goodwin. I'm the Director of Administrative Services for Northwest Arctic Borough School District. I'm pleased to hear that you have the written testimony from Dr. Eck of the school district. He is currently traveling, and he asked me to make sure that you do have that written testimony. And if anything further is needed, if you want me to read that written testimony, I'd be glad to. Or if any questions about the written testimony, I'd be glad to answer.
Okay, thank you. And I guess what I would like to say is there's a fair amount of testimony for the committee here on three issues. And I guess the one that I was talking to Mr. Rose about was your statement of the second bullet point under the 80-day count, that your count is low because in rural Alaska, people leave during that October count and are gone to Anchorage, and you know, or for other reasons associated with the timing of the PFDs. And I didn't quite understand in here why the 80-day count then wouldn't pick up those students, and you would actually have the greater attendance for showing for the kids that you actually have coming back and educating and keeping in class. So if I'm misunderstanding that, would you kind of outline that for me?
The statement that I have doesn't have that. It was a second draft, I think, that you have. But I've talked to Dr. Eck about that statement, and that what we experience in Northwest Arctic Borough School District during that count period with the PFD is a lot of the, it gives an opportunity for the parents and families to move into Anchorage with, and then during that 20-day count, we're finding that they're enrolling maybe in the Anchorage School District and possibly reconciling just that type of transition of students during just that period of time, that an additional 80-day count period would put a bigger burden on the district in trying to negotiate those or weed out those duplicate enrollments and stuff. So it's just that timing of that PFD and in our enrollment does affect rural Alaska, that we see this as an opportunity for the students to be leaving or possibly dropping from the school.
Okay, and I guess if you wouldn't mind following up with us a little bit more on that, that would be helpful, because as we're looking at it, then after that period when they had left associated with PFD and other trips, they would be returning to your district and they would be included in the count, and so you would actually get greater funding for those students that are returning is the way we're looking at it. And I don't want to debate it now, but if you wouldn't mind looking at your records and sending us in some other testimony so that we could so we have a little more time to consider what that effect would be on the district. Appreciate that. And
yeah, absolutely.
Okay, thank you very much. Does did you want to give any more oral testimony in addition to this written testimony you have?
The only one I want to reiterate on for my personal self as the business manager for the district, the 80-day count part of that, as Dave Jones testified earlier, that it's actually on the prior year, really is a benefit to the districts in knowing the budget process. So that's the only part of it that I saw that was encouraging.
Okay, thank you very much. And I think that's encouraging for the smaller schools where they might have that cutoff 10 period as well. So Representative Gardner, then Munoz. Representative Munoz.
Thank you. I have a question. This is Kathy Munoz, and I was curious, in your district, do you experience migration of families that come to your communities for certain resource jobs or jobs in certain industries and then leave at other seasons of the year?
Well, certainly we have the seasonal type of employment with construction in certain areas. So yes, we do see that. How that affects our enrollment is more the opposite way, is that they're usually leaving the region for different jobs or but one great employment that we have here in the region is the Red Dog mine that employs quite a few in our region. But we do see that seasonal moving in and out because of employment issues.
Follow up, Representative Munoz.
Could you provide some data back to us on what those numbers might look like for your district? I know in Southeast Alaska we have seasonal migration around fishing and tourism and other resource areas.
Certainly the type of data I could provide would be the enrollment and how the ebb and flow of that enrollment goes.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, that'd be appreciated, because it may be a different factor where you're in a Arctic environment versus southeastern or western Alaska, and so the different districts may be experiencing different employment timing, and so that would be helpful to us. Are there further questions? Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Goodwin. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 206 at this time? Please come forward. Welcome. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Woody Wilson, Superintendent for Wrangell Public Schools. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity. I would just like to mention a couple of things. I'll try to be brief. First of all, the work keys situation, as we have talked to some of you individually, work keys will not benefit, from my perspective, students who enter college for a four-year college degree. It's not very useful. The second thing that perhaps the committee hasn't thought about is the alignment of work keys with the state standards. We do have Alaska state standards in education. The work keys examination, I don't believe, will effectively test what we're being supposed to teach. And so that's just another issue that perhaps the committee hadn't thought about. Les Morse with the Department of Education is an expert on the Alaska standards and the SBAs and could provide you with more information on that if the committee is interested. The other couple of comments that Mr. Rose made in terms of the in-state, it sounds like you're going to take care of that on line 17 of page 2. In-state college, that would be helpful if that was changed because many of our students would obviously like to enroll other places. And then again, when we talk about the on page 2, line 24, where it starts in that the school district shall make arrangements, I did some quick homework before I left home on Friday, and we only have 22 seniors this year, but my 22 seniors in Wrangell are taking up currently 197 credits through some post-secondary institution. Using the Alaska University of Alaska Southeast schedule for those credits, that would be a cost of $131,835 if the school district had to pay the full amount. If I total all of the credits for my underclassmen, we're taking an additional 419 credits. So my point is, and I didn't even total that because that was a large number, and we're just concerned. We're already doing what I think the committee wants us to do in terms of getting these kids 6 credits. And in many of our students are going to have 20 credits, 25 credits. Some of them are close to being through their first year of college when they leave our school district. So I know that's one of the intent of this committee to do that. We're just concerned that somehow this may upset the apple cart. And if I had to, for example, pay for all those credits at full fee, the $40,000 that you're offering us through the other bill would be eaten up and then some, the $40,000 for voc ed, that's an extra 1.5%. We appreciate that. It's just we don't want there to be any unintended consequences in the bill. So we're concerned. We think that you're on the right track asking students to do this. Research proves that 6 credits helps you be successful later on, helps kids enter college and be successful there. You're on the right track. I also would like to say that I appreciate the study that your committee is doing in education. That's refreshing, and that's really good. Mr. Chairman, do you have this document?
We do, and we've distributed it to the committee, and appreciate that. Do you have more?
Just,
yeah, go ahead.
One other thing. On the 80-day count, we believe that would be very difficult to reconcile. There's a reconciliation that has to take place after the student count. For example, under the 20-day count, if a student is in my district one day, I get 1/20th of the money, or 1/20th of the money tracks with the student. If they move to another school district, that school district gets the count for the period of time they're in that school district. And sometimes our records don't always jive. Obviously, I want the student for the maximum number of days in my district, and Craig wants them for the maximum number of days in their district, and so on. So that reconciliation of when did the child actually enroll in your school, when did they actually leave my school, is not always an easy process. We're doing that for 20 days now. If we had to do that for 80 days, we have some students that move several times. That would be very difficult, and it would be 4 times the reconciliation. It would be a lot of work. It's not a matter of just pushing a button and the computer cranks out a response. It's a more difficult process than that. I understand your dilemma wanting to extend the count. Frankly, I would have preferred the two counts originally presented by the committee, or an extension of this count period to perhaps 40 days or something different. The 80-day count is just going to be a lot of work, particularly for small school districts. So the other thing that the committee is looking at is the reduction of dropouts by doing a different count period. And I am suspecting that this is a phenomenon that's a national phenomenon. The longer you're in school, the more students drop out. That's just a natural phenomenon. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't be working on it, and I believe we are. But I think that changing the count is not going to have a likely positive outcome. I don't think it's going to be really successful. I think there are some other things perhaps that might be more successful. And in terms of enforcement of students that drop out, I've been a school administrator for a number of years. I've never been very successful getting any help from the Department of Social Services or from the police departments, from law enforcement. And it is, in my view, it's a matter of law. It's not a matter of the principal going to get the kid out of bed. If the kid's not coming to school, then somebody has broken the law, and law enforcement or social services should be involved. So I think it's a partnership between education, social services, the law. All of us need to be working on this. It's not just a school effort. So, I don't mean to be totally negative. As I said, I really do appreciate the committee. I think you're thinking hard about trying to find ways to improve education in our state, and I certainly appreciate that.
Thank you. I had a question on your chart here. You know, that looked, you know, very impressive, and I'm sure this whole committee is appreciative of the way your district is working on doing it. But I'm trying to figure out, so are you making arrangements for the fees for these appropriate post-secondary courses now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so if the language is a statute says you'll make arrangements for the fees for the appropriate post-secondary courses, I'm trying to reconcile. I mean, we changed the bill from the earlier language that said, you know, that could be interpreted that you're going to provide it all free and that's it, to this language that seems to correspond with what you're currently doing. So can you lead me down the path of where that goes?
I'll try, Mr. Chairman. If I were President Hamilton and I saw this language come through in law, I would come to Woody Wilson, Superintendent of Schools in Wrangell, and I'd say I want full payment for tuition. That deal that we had last year is not going to work for me anymore. That's what I would say if I were the chief administrator of the university system, because I would see that as an opportunity to draw down full tuition on all those students. It seems to make sense to me that the president of the university would do that. So,
I can definitely tell you when we have a new university president, which we're going to have soon, that's going to be one of the questions we'll be asking him for sure. Representative Wilson.
How do you do it now as far as if you don't pay the full tuition, what do you pay?
Representative Wilson, through the chair, we have an arrangement now through the university and through, actually we work with a couple of different post-secondary institutions to do this. We actually teach the classes with our own faculty, and because we do that and we pay for the faculty, we pay for the faculty's benefits, we pay for the books and so on, the university has given us a deal where we get the credit for our students at $25 per credit. And that works pretty well. And in some instances, we're able to defray that cost even. The students currently pay that cost, the $25. It's a huge savings for a family if their child can get through their freshman year of college at $25 a credit. That is just a huge savings. So it's a real benefit to everyone. That's currently the way it works. There are some programs where we can pay the credit. Migrant Ed, for example, pays the credit for our students. In other communities that I'm aware of, there are Native organizations that pay for credit. There's a number of ways to do it, but that's the way we do it in Wrangell.
Representative Wilson.
How do you get by with your teachers teaching the classes?
Our teachers, through the chair, Representative Wilson, our teachers have to be approved by the university, and there has to be an articulation agreement with the university on the curriculum. So, in other words, the curriculum that we teach in Wrangell is the same curriculum that's taught at the university for that particular course. Our students take the same entrance exam or qualifying exam to make sure that they're qualified to enter the course, and if there's a follow-up course or if that course is a prerequisite for another course, then there's another test that they must take at the end to make sure they're ready to progress on to the next level.
Thank you. Further questions for... I guess I had one on work keys. Of course, you're familiar that this next year you, every student in the 11th grade in your schools is going to be taking work keys tests. Do you currently pay for the ACT for students taking ACT?
No, sir.
Do you currently pay for students taking an SAT?
No. We do, Mr. Chairman, offer some classes for students to prepare for those classes or for those tests.
Okay, so there's nothing in this bill that would prevent the you from continuing to offer ACT or SAT preparation classes, and those students, as they are right now, paying on their own dime for those courses. Is that correct?
That's correct.
The committee has been looking mainly at something that had continuous improvement model, which is what this bill is looking at, is work keys versus a high school qualifying exam, mm-hmm. High school graduation exam. We heard Mr. Jones from Kenai testimony that as long as the monitoring was the same two times per year, or that this wasn't a continuous offering, that wasn't going to be an administrative burden for them if that substituted for that other exam. Is that the same situation with your district as far as administering tests, the high school qualifying exam, or the work keys? Would the administrative burden be the same if they were offered the same on the same kind of schedule?
Well, my assumption is that because I don't view work keys as being quite as high stakes of a test, that perhaps the burden could be even less. There's a great deal of burden that goes along with a high school qualifying exam because of the security involved in checking booklets in, checking booklets out. Only certain people can see the booklets. You can't read the booklets and so on. So the work keys administration could even be easier.
Okay, thank you, and I appreciate that. So let's see, are there further questions? No, thank you, and if there's any other information that as things go along that you would like to submit, we'd be happy to receive it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Do we have anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on House Bill 206? Do we have anybody else online that would like to testify on House Bill 206? Seeing none, I am going to close testimony for today. I will reopen testimony on Friday, but I'm going to close testimony so we can have committee discussion. So we closed committee test or public testimony for today. We will reopen that for additional testimony at the next time we consider the bill. So, committee discussion. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. If Mr. Wilson's still here, I just want to thank him very much for his testimony to start. I initially was supportive of this bill and felt like it sort of brought together a lot of the testimony and the study we've done over the preceding year. But I've actually kind of shifted around my thinking on lots of parts of it. I support the WorkKeys testing, but I think our intent is to use it to replace existing testing system, and yet the bill doesn't do that. I mean, if we were to pass the bill as it is right now, it would just be another layer of testing because we're not taking anything off the plate of districts. So, I mean, that's one factor. It seems if we want to replace it, this is the place to do it while we add something. The argument about college-bound testing that Mr. Wilson had, that this doesn't do it for kids, to me, that's not an issue. I mean, as the chair pointed out, kids are already taking ACTs and SATs if they want to go to college, and they're doing it, and this doesn't change or impact that. I don't think it's an argument to not use WorkKeys. So I'm comfortable with that aspect. On page 2 of the bill, section, that's the section of statute 1403074, I don't understand what this section does unless it mandates the districts pick up all or part of the fee. I mean, my understanding is that students who have completed their requirements and are currently enrolled can already take classes at UA. I mean, I know my kids did when they were in high school, and I didn't pay for it. I don't know who paid for it. But in terms of actually being able to take the classes, that already exists. So the question is who pays and under what terms, and I don't think we've quite nailed it here. Section 2 of the bill, student count periods, I initially supported having one early and one late. I think this is an example of identifying a problem and trying to put in a fix, but again, we haven't exactly nailed it. I'm not sure that we've done anything except increase the burden on school districts without necessarily improving outcomes for students at all. If we want school districts to step up and be more engaged, we need to mandate truant officers or fund them or something like that. And I don't think this really does what we wanted it to do. So I guess I don't think this bill's anywhere near ready to go anywhere.
Let's see, did we have... and before we go 2 minutes more, we did want to get Mr. Jeans up here to answer some questions. Can I ask the committee to defer? Mr. Jeans, would you come? We had a couple of questions some testimony about the difficulty, and we've got some other about reconciling in an 80-day count period. Can you, we don't know the technicalities or the logistics or what that would entail. Can you kind of lead the committee through what the reconciliation process is, how it works in 20 days, why it would be, if it would be more difficult or, I mean, at this point in time, it might be, but if you set up a system, would it be more difficult to take place over the 80-day count period that we have in the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Eddie Jeans. I'm the Director of School Finance and Facilities for the Department of Education. And I knew you weren't going to let me sit there all day. So. Mr. Chairman, under the current foundation program, we have a 20-day count that all the districts participate in. It's based on enrollment. And after the districts submit those counts through our unique student identifier, we go through a process of reconciling counts so that we're not paying for a student more than once. And as you heard from previous testifiers, the process can be kind of cumbersome, and it does take the department, I would say, close to 2 months to complete that reconciliation under the current 20-day count period. And the description that was used by Superintendent Wilson is exactly right. If there's a student that's enrolled in his district for a portion of that count, they go and enroll in another district. Quite often we find that those dates overlap, and the department, I don't want to say has to mediate, but sometimes we do, who gets to claim the student for a particular number of days during the count. Now, your larger school districts, their student accounting systems are quite sophisticated, and recording the number of students enrolled during a 20, 40, 60, 80-day count period shouldn't be all that difficult. But as we get through, back into that reconciliation process, I would say that it's going to take us, the department, longer to complete that process with a longer count period. Many of our smaller school districts with small student populations aren't nearly as sophisticated. And so expanding the count from a 20-day count to, 40, 60, 80, whatever, is going to be more of a burden on them. And when I say they're not as sophisticated, what I mean is their process for counting their students isn't quite as sophisticated. Some districts are still using Excel spreadsheets because their population is so small, it doesn't make any sense to have an actual student database for that tracking purposes. So we get the information in all kinds of forms at the department, and then we put that into our database, go through this reconciliation process, and I would have to agree it's going to take that reconciliation a lot longer to occur on an expanded count.
And if you were doing an 80-day count period, would you wait until the end of the 80 days to start that, or would you do that in a couple of batches so that you would be doing through the end of the year as one? I mean, it seems like those data are all there and be ready and could be reconciled, because those aren't going to change based on the later portion. So I'm wondering whether this would necessarily be wait until the end to do everything.
Mr. Chairman, currently we do wait until the end. We wait until we have all the data in from all the districts to send those reconciliations out. What we do is we actually put all the students into our database based on their unique identifier, and we produce reports, and it says Eddie was counted in Juneau for 15 days, and then he was counted over in Angoon for 10. And we send those reports back to those school districts, both of them, and we say, hey guys, you can't have them in both places for that 5 days. You know, where's your documentation to support the claim, you know, and so on. Would we have to wait to the end on an 80-day count? No. But as I mentioned previously, we're spending close to 2 months doing a reconciliation right now on a 20-day count period. So, I mean, once you got through a 20-day count period, we would basically be in a reconciliation process almost up until the end of the school year, a continuous reconciliation.
Okay, and one other thing, everybody, I presume, is using at least an Excel spreadsheet. I mean, everybody has some computerized systems. So if you were doing an 80-day count period like this, would you anticipate that the department would come forward with some kind of a system that at least would come into yours as a, so it wouldn't be manual entry, or wouldn't be, so that it would be on similar forms, so that it would be integrated more, or do you think that that's just too hard to do across the 50 districts?
Mr. Chairman, I think that if this legislation passes and we're mandated an 80-day count period, the department will do whatever it can to make that transition as simple and seamless for school districts as possible. And if that required multiple submissions throughout the 80-day count, you know, I haven't talked to districts enough to figure out if that's a valid approach. But I don't think with an 80-day count period we can just wait to the end and go through the reconciliation process then, because I can almost guarantee you I'll be into the next school year before I get it all figured out.
And just following up, the necessity for the reconciliation is going to be no longer like the 20 days, so we know how much money you get for that year. This would be for those districts that were going to have an increase in the student count. That's the only reason they really need to know it, because they actually got funded on their actual count for last year, and so that the only those that are seeing an increase are going to be affected in the current year with the extended count. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, that's correct, but then that count also becomes your base for the subsequent year, so the count has to be accurate. We have to look at all the students across the state and get those duplicates reconciled.
Sure, and just so we get clarity on this, so when is it that districts start doing their budgeting so that they would need a basically a reconciled count so that they'd know what their last year number would be for their budgeting process for the next year? Because that would be the base, that reconciled base would be the funding base for the following year.
Mr. Chairman, districts will be developing budgets and probably have them completed before the reconciliation in the current year occurs, which would be the base count for the subsequent year. So they will not know in advance when they're developing their budget what their funding level is going to be. They will have a pretty good estimate because they'll be in the process of doing the count, but they won't know for sure. The budgeting process in many districts starts in January. Planning even starts in November, December for the upcoming school year in some cases. Districts are required to have their budget submitted to their municipalities, I believe it's April 1st. So, you know, they're well into developing their budget when this count would still be ongoing.
And I guess what would you anticipate would be the variance in reconciled count? So let's say we had either a small district or a large district that had had student population and student count throughout the 80 days and would know how many kids were in their class, but that might get adjusted by this reconciliation. How much of a margin or variance would you anticipate the districts would see from their data in that reconciliation process?
Mr. Chairman, I don't think there's a huge variance. It's just a time-consuming process to get the numbers accurate that we're paying for.
So basically, at the end of the 80-day count period, they'll know how many students they had enrolled in that average day membership. So I guess what I'm trying to do is figure out whether we're talking about 0.2% or we're talking about 10% variation that could be anticipated in a district based on this reconciliation process.
Mr. Chairman, I understand what you're asking for, and I'm not prepared to give you a percentage even under the current 20-day count, what that variance is.
Okay, so maybe you could look at
that. I'd be happy to take a look at it.
And get back with us under the current one. If we knew what that variance was, it would probably be even less under an 80-day count period, I would presume. Or maybe it would be more.
Actually, Mr. Chairman, I think it would go the other way. The okay. variance would be greater because during an 80-day count period, you're going to more than likely have more student movement. And the more student movement you have, the more difficult the reconciliation process becomes.
Okay. Well, this is something we really need to know if we're going forward, because the budgeting constraints of districts and the necessity to know, and like I say, if it's one student or two students or if that's kind of variation, then it's really not the huge significant issue. If it's 400 students is what you sometimes see in the 20-day count period or something, then for a district, then it's a huge issue that impacts consideration of this in the budget, so or in the bill. So if you would write that up for us.
Yep.
And get back to us. That's appreciated.
Happy to.
I appreciate the committee's indulgence in pursuing this line so that we got to the end of looking at budgeting and looking at the variance on a student count in 80 days. And so committee questions. Representative Munoz.
Thank you, Eddie. Could you tell me how much staff time is dedicated to reconciliation? How many staff actually are working through this process?
Well, I'm glad you're all sitting down. Through the chair, Representative Munoz, we have one staff that administers the foundation program.
Okay.
But during the reconciliation process, I have as many as three staff working on that at a given time. And as I mentioned, it takes us a little over 2 months to get the reconciliation done.
Okay.
Follow-up, Representative Munoz.
Are they pretty much dedicated most of their time during that two-month period to this exercise?
Through the chair, I would say yes until about the second week of January. Okay. Then they get busy doing fiscal notes.
Okay.
I think that was a comment for all of us up here. Representative Munoz.
Have you thought, too, about what additional staff needs would be if we did do an extended count?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, I have not anticipated that it would require additional staff. It's going to take additional time. And it's the time that creates the unknown for school districts.
Representative Wilson, I believe it was.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Eddie, when the schools count, I just don't have a clue here. When the schools count during that 20-day period, if somebody is sick during that time, they're sick. They're there for the first 3 days, but then got the whooping cough or something, and they were gone the rest of the time. I mean, how do you count them? As long as they were enrolled, they're still there, or how does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Wilson, our funding formula is based on enrollment, not attendance. So if the student's enrolled and they're out sick, they're still enrolled, they count in the 20-day count. They could be on vacation. Basically, if they have an excused absence, they're still counted. I would even say if they had an unexcused absence, they're still counted. We have our rules that if students are gone for 10 consecutive days and you haven't had contact with the parents, you have to drop them from your enrollment. You're not serving them. You don't know where they are. You have to drop them. But, most parents are checking in with the district. They know, the district knows where the kids are, whether or not they're going to be back. So.
All right.
Thank you.
Representative Wilson, follow up for another question?
I don't think so.
Representative Gardner? No? Anyone else? I guess. We did have one other thing that was talked about, and that was that when you analyze the two-count period, you had stated that you thought that that would be a decreased student population, result in a decreased student population across the entire state, so that there's going to be less kids in school across the entire state. And so I guess I'm presuming that is based on not just vacations out of state, but that there are students just no longer participating in school.
In public school.
And that's public school. So if with the 80-day count period versus the two count periods, that didn't have anything to do with the count period. Your testimony there, your idea was that you anticipate that there are just less students going to school, public school, in the second half of the year than the first half of the year.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. And could you outline for the committee, and you could just do it in writing to us, what factors and the larger factors and the smaller factors of what you see as the reasons for less attendance or enrollment in public schools that we see on a continuous basis in the second half of years as an ongoing situation?
Yes, sir, Mr. Chairman. I understand the request.
Okay.
We'll get you the information.
Yeah. And Representative Wilson.
Yes, I just thought of something else because, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I don't know who will answer this, but I kind of would like to hear a little bit more about the work keys again, because we've had several schools. I met with a group of schools yesterday, and they told me that with the exit exam, that they've got standards that they teach to, and now if we're going to do the work keys, that would be a total different standard, and they were worried about that. And I don't know if we need to be worried about that or not, but I think I would like to just hear a little bit more about it so that I would know whether that is something, you know, it just might be a fear factor at this time, or it might be something legitimate, but I'd kind of like to check on that so that we know. And we also heard some people say that the work keys wasn't going to help anybody that went to college. I kind of would like to double check to see if that is an actual fact or not, but
and thank you. And I guess what we do want to do is I had noted down here that we want to see if we can get Les Morris in to talk about the assessment. Talk about, I believe, Mr. Jeans, do you know if the department has been looking at alignment of correspondence between levels of work keys and ACT scores or SAT? I remember there was a conversation in which someone was doing that assessment. I don't know if it's a department or someone else nationwide. And Mr. Morris, I think, gave us the information that assessment was going forward. And also where we're at as looking at the correspondence between levels of work keys and the state standards. We heard that in testimony. We were going to ask for that. And I think that's what you're requesting, isn't it, Representative Wilson?
Yes.
Is there anything additional to what I just stated that you want to see in that?
I just want to know that if that's going to mean that we have to change the standards, that, I mean, you know, I don't know, but I would kind of like to know to make sure that we're not presenting something to them that they're not teaching on at all, you know.
Right. And, you know, this weaves back into the Governor's Performance Scholarship and the requirements there and the testing. And so this isn't a one-time-off thing. These things are all weaving together, and so we would like to really get the assessment there, because at least in Wyoming and other places, work keys is what they use for the assessment for those that are for more than half of the students, because they're going for certificated programs or community colleges. All the community colleges are using work keys to assess the levels of students, whereas the University of Wyoming was using ACT. And so we need to, I think that relates to this balance of where we are and what's scheduled, and whether we want to have a differentiation between the tests that students are going to take depending upon what they've determined they're going to do, or we use one with different levels. So Mr. Morris will know what we're looking for.
Mr. Chairman, I think we're having a GPS meeting Friday, and the commissioner will be here to speak to the GPS program, and he will be able to address the ACT versus work keys assessment within the GPS program. And I would be happy to work with Louie to figure out when will be the good time to have Les Morris come up and speak on the SBAs, the work keys, and how those work together.
And we've got GPS is the only thing we have on the schedule, Governor's Performance Scholarship, for Friday. So we might have this discussion on Friday as well. because I think they're going to correspond. So I'm not sure if we'll take the whole 2 hours on GPS at this initial stage, but I think that if Mr. Morris could come Friday as well, then we'll have, we've got, under bills previously heard, we've got 206 available on Friday as well, and I think that would be the appropriate time to talk about work keys and its integration into our school system. Representative Munoz.
Just one quick question, clarification. Earlier it was said that a lot of kids may leave around the October count to go to the larger communities with their families when the PFDs come out. But that really doesn't affect the funding for those schools as long as they're enrolled in those schools. Didn't you say they don't have to be physically present?
Through the chair, Representative Munoz, you're correct. Unless those parents are going in and withdrawing their student, going into Anchorage, enrolling in Anchorage, it shouldn't affect their count.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there further questions for Mr. Jeans or for the things that the committee wants to bring up?
Mr. Chairman, I'll piggyback on the previous question by Representative Munoz, and this is, I guess, more facetious than anything, but there's no way that we can track this dynamic of people getting the PFDs and moving around. Is there? There's just no way that we can know. I'm guessing, and I'm just asking Eddie if if you'd say anything to the contrary.
Through the chair, Representative Edgman, what I'm saying is unless those parents are going in and physically withdrawing their students, they're still eligible to make the foundation claim for those students.
Mm-hmm.
I do not know that if in Northwest Stardate that there's a bunch of parents going out there and withdrawing their kids. I think I have some data back at the department that I'll take a look at that may help answer that question. That would tell me if the students are withdrawing, going someplace else, enrolling, withdrawing, they're coming back. But I think that will probably take us a little bit longer to analyze and get back to you.
No, we appreciate that, and we've also requested Northwest Arctic to send us. I requested them verbally to send us that information or write that up and show us what that effect was. So hopefully we'll hear back from them as well. But that's different than the department. We still want to hear,
sure.
See what the department's analysis. And it doesn't have to be just on Northwest Arctic. I mean, if you have other information, indicators of where things are, we'd appreciate. We want to solicit additional information from you. Anything else? Okay, then, hey, guess what? We're out early, 10 till 10. We will be adjourned.